More than 1,000 people took part in a virtual town hall discussion on policing and public health. The discussion was sponsored by an organization called Free the People Rochester, after the city had seen days of protest following revelations that members of the Rochester Police Department had killed a man named Daniel Prude. A panel of experts addressed questions about policing and mental health issues. Here are some of the voices from that virtual town hall. The first voice you'll hear is that of Shawnee Wilson, chair of the Rochester Police Accountability Board. Dr. Wilson addressed the question of whether she sees policing as a public health crisis.
Policing as it is now is a public health crisis, yes, absolutely. Because there's documented evidence, there's studies on how police affect the public and how the actual job itself affects police.
Melanie Funchess of the Mental Health Association and a member of the Greater Rochester Black Agenda agreed.
Policing as it is a public health crisis because it causes deleterious effects to the health of people and disproportionately Black and Brown people. A group has said that law is the servant of a loving community, and law enforcement as it currently stands is not that. Not just when you have the physical effects, when people are killed and maimed and beaten up and hurt, but the stress, the chronic stress of being policed, being oppressed, that is visited upon disproportionately upon Black and Brown and poor people, that is a public health crisis because of all the well-documented effects of stress on health. Instead of looking at training, because some things can be trained, some things cannot. You know, we can train people in different techniques, but I can't train you on compassion. I cannot train you to see the humanized Blackness. I can't train that.
Alex Vitale, a nationally recognized expert on policing, address the question of whether we can reform our way out of these problems.
We made a huge error in turning every social problem in society, especially those in poor and non-white communities, over to the police to manage. And police at root are violence workers. The tools they have to solve our community problems are guns and handcuffs and ticket books and tear gas. They don't have access to supportive housing. They don't have access to community-based mental health services. They don't have access to high-quality substance abuse treatment services. They don't have access to summer jobs for our young people, affordable housing. These are the kinds of things that produce strong, healthy, stable, and safe communities. But the problem is elected officials have come to think that they can ignore those problems, and if they get out of hand, they can put a lid on them by turning that problem over to police. And then when, surprise and surprise, the police turn out to be violent and to act in a racially disproportionate fashion, their solution is not to have a rethink of why they've turned every problem over to the police. It's to give the police more money for more training, more technology, more professionalization, as if the problem were a few bad apples or a lack of professionalism, when the problem really rests in the decision-making of elected officials who tell communities they can't have the things that they really want to make their community safe. All they can have is police. And then they present them with the false choice. Well, we don't want to defund the police because then you'll have nothing. And we have to break that false choice. We have to say, no, what we want is to shift resources that have been used to criminalize our communities into the kinds of things that will make them healthier and safer.
Again, Melanie Funchess.
What I would like to see is have there be a precision of fit between the challenge and the solution. When I need my car worked on, I don't get my manicurist. When I want my feet done, I don't call a mechanic. Why is it that when we need someone to do mental health, we call a cop? Make that make sense. I would love to see where we have trained, seasoned, culturally responsive mental health professionals and community health people to respond to people in distress in the community. I would like to see teams that are deployed that understand not just the clinical aspects, but understand the human aspects of a particular neighborhood and a particular set of people to respond with a precision of fit, of the right response in the right tone, in the right place, by the right messenger at the right time.
Dr. Shawnee Wilson.
You know, in Monroe County, there's not enough psychiatric people that can actually practice. You know, for us, we're trying to pull a rabbit out of a hat every day.
Tim Black from the Eugene, Oregon-based group Cahoots described that city's project and offered it as an alternative.
So Cahoots is an acronym. It stands for Crisis Assistance Helping Out on the Streets. And since 1989 in Eugene, Oregon, Whiteberg Clinic, which is a federally qualified health center, has been operating the Cahoots program. Cahoots teams are made up of a crisis worker and an EMT. We respond to calls for service that are all routed through the public safety system. So, when somebody is calling 911 because they perceive what they're experiencing to be so emergent that, you know, I got to get emergency services on the line. For a lot of different reasons, the Cahoots program operates within that traditional public safety sphere. We responded to 24,000 calls for service last year. Looking at Eugene specifically, Cahoots was involved in 18,000 responses. If Cahoots hadn't been around, 13,000 of those would have gone to police and fire to resolve. And through that high level of response, we only called for police to come and support us in 311 situations. So it's 300 times, you know, less than once a day. When we're responding to 60 or 70 calls a day that we're actually calling police to come back in and support us in those interventions. Cahoots teams respond to all manner of crises ranging from suicidal ideation, other behavioral health challenges, to addiction, issues related to housing. In this moment, we are spending a lot more time talking about replication and scaling. You know, I think that over the last 31 years, we've certainly learned a lot and can provide a template for, you know, foundation for other communities to really build something that's nuanced, that's unique to meet the needs of their community. If we want to bring in something that's going to be culturally responsive, right, and is informed by the needs of the community, we need to give each community an opportunity to really build something that's going to work for them. By no means do, you know, we assume that Cahoots is some sort of cookie cutter thing that you can just toss down in Rochester the same way it's happening here in Eugene and expect the same kind of outcomes. Different communities require different resources. It's important also to really highlight that Cahoots is only as successful as we are because we get to serve as that hub connecting all the different spokes. You know, if we didn't have the support of the community, if we didn't have resources to really connect folks to, all we would be doing is perpetuating that same cycle of activity within the criminal legal system and, interaction with the emergency medical system. And those are things that we're really trying to divert folks from.
Dr. Raphael Outland, a professor from SUNY Brockport, address the question about what impact police violence has on young people.
Many of these young people have to exist in communities where the police not only gets paid vacation in a similar fashion that happened in Rochester, but after they're justified for murdering a child, they get the privilege to return back to work in those young people's communities. So as a result, young people are moving around, still trying to be kids, while all the while having to deal with police occupation of someone who has killed either the loved one, friend, or peer. Many families rarely receive any justice. So in other words, police are rarely held accountable for their actions. So many families, whether it's the first day of losing their young person, or if it's 3-4 years later, are dealing with what we may call long-term complicated grief. And this grief may consist of the inability to sleep at night, the inability to eat, the inability to move forward, the inability to get out of bed. One of the solutions is that we have to start by identifying the injustice. And once we identify the injustice, we have to ensure that we address it adequately based on the demands of the victim. That is when I believe only the process of healing can take place. One thing I can guarantee, if we begin to embrace some of those practices, is that we can guarantee that victims like Daniel Prude would still be alive after those mental health folks intervene.
Stanley Martin from the Center for Community Alternatives talked about the lack of services available for people of color struggling with substance abuse problems.
The police are not equipped to deal with substance use disorder. The treatment models we also see in Rochester tend to not be culturally appropriate and culturally sensitive to the experiences of Black and Brown people who have substance use disorder. So we believe that the city should reallocate funds from the police department and put funds into culturally responsive models for people with substance use disorder.
Melanie Funches from the Mental Health Association closed with these words.
The fact is that what we're doing isn't working, period. So we can either continue to throw good money after bad, or we can try something else.